Kanyam Shri Tata Parada Saroja Gandham Adraya Sammukaritam Janatapa Vargam Masmi Lalaya Vipinaya Narayasya Acha Satoru Bhayamata Vibhinda Drishtihi. Ladies. Kanyam Shayeta Tavapada Sarota Gandham Agraya Sammukaritam Janata Pavargam Lakshmyalayam Tvaliganaya Gunalayasya Madhya Sadoru Bhayamata Vivikta Krishti Ka. What woman? Anyam.
Anyam.
Another man. Shrayeta would take shelter of Tava your Pada of the feet Saroja
of the lotus
Gandham the aroma Aghraya
having smelled
Sat by great saints
Mukaritam
described Janata for all people Apavargam bestowing liberation
Lakshmi
of the goddess of fortune
Alayam
the place of residence
to
but Aviganaya,
not taking seriously,
Guna, of all transcendental qualities,
Alayasya,
of the abode,
Maritya,
mortal,
Sada,
always,
Uru,
great,
Bhayam,
one who has fear.
Artha.
Her best interest.
Vivikta.
Ascertaining.
Drishtihi.
Whose insight.
Whose
insight. The aroma of your lotus feet, which is glorified by great saints, awards people liberation and is the abode of Goddess Lakshmi. What woman would take shelter of any other man after savouring that aroma? Since you are the abode of transcendental qualities, what mortal woman with the insight to distinguish her own true interest would disregard that fragrance and depend instead on someone who is always subject to terrible fear? Purport. In text 16, Lord Krishna claimed that he was gunayar hinaha, bereft of all good qualities. To refute this claim, the devoted Rukmini here states that the Lord is gunalaya, the abode of all good qualities. In a single moment, the so-called powerful men of this world, can be reduced to utter helplessness and confusion. The Lord, however, has an eternal spiritual body that is omnipotent and infinitely beautiful, and thus, as Queen Rukmini argues here, how could any sane, enlightened woman take shelter of anyone but the Supreme Lord Krishna? Om Agyanatimirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Indeed, how could any sane person take shelter of anyone but the Supreme Lord Krishna? Well, ignorance is a very powerful thing. Of which most of the living entities in the material world are thickly covered by. So, what to speak of relishing the fragrance of the lotus feet of Krishna, they don't even accept that God exists. So, they're a long way from this position of Rukmini, very, very fortunate. She's saying that once having had your association, once having been embraced by you, once having had an opportunity to relish the fragrance of your lotus feet. Here it is mentioned, Saroja Gandham Agraya, having smelled the fragrance of the lotus feet of Krishna. Smells like a lotus. Then who would look elsewhere? Those lotus feet are the object of meditation for the great saints and sages. They're the abode of the goddess of fortune. You know, everybody is worshipping the goddess of fortune. Everybody wants to be wealthy. Everybody wants the blessings of Lakshmi. And yet, where does Lakshmi reside? Lakshmi resides always at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. She's always his attendant, his maidservant. Similarly, the great saints and sages, sadhus, mukaritam janata apavargam, they describe how, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, one can get liberation. Apavargam means liberation. One can get out of the bondage of material existence. So, the lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna's meditating on Krishna's lotus feet, getting an opportunity to associate with the lotus feet of Krishna is such an opportunity and bestows such benedictions that the devotees are prepared to give up anything for that position, for that association with the Lord. And that's been mentioned previously. The devotees are prepared to sacrifice anything for service to Krishna, because that service to Krishna is the most relishable, the most tasty, the most delicious experience that one can hope to have. So Rukmini is saying that the great saints and sages give up everything to worship you, to be with you, to have your association, to get the association of your lotus feet. And you may say that you have no good qualities. You may say that you have no good qualities. But we see that anybody who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna is endowed with all transcendental qualities. In fact, Krishna is described here by and is mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary, and here by Hridayananda Maharaj. Actually, Krishna is not, well, certainly he is without qualities in one sense, because he doesn't have any material qualities. All of his qualities are purely transcendental. And so it's mentioned here, you are gunalaya, you say you have no qualities, but actually you are the source of all qualities, both good and bad, but certainly of all of the transcendental qualities, Krishna is the abode and the source of such. So therefore, it is my desire to take shelter of you. Why would I take shelter of anybody else when, despite whatever good qualities other men may have, those qualities are all limited and temporary? Or here it's mentioned. You are the abode of transcendental qualities. So why would one disregard you to seek someone else who is always subject to terrible fear, which means basically they're going to die? You know, everybody in the material world is scared of death. There are those who say they're not, but that's just a fool speaking. You know, they say on the battlefield there are no atheists, right? There are no atheists on the battlefield. When the bombs start dropping, then everybody starts praying. Oh my God. In fact, you know, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that he's death. I come as death. So Rukmini is saying, you know, why should anyone... Why should, well, specifically, why would a woman not be attracted to you and go to somebody else when you're the abode of all, you are the abode of all transcendental qualities, all good qualities, and all of the others are simply fallible, you know, conditioned souls who have to die? As Hridayananda Maharaj mentions here, Krishna has an eternal spiritual body that is omnipotent and infinitely beautiful. This is, you know, we sing that, we sing this every morning. Angani yascha sakalendriya vritti manti pasyanti panti kalayanti jiram jaganti. What is it? What's the next line? Ananda chinmaya sadujvala vigrahasya. Sadujvala is very brilliant and beautiful. Krishna's form is brilliant and beautiful. Vigrahasya means a form. So the Lord's form is Satchit Ananda, eternal, not subject to degradation like the forms of the men of the material world, the men and women of the material world. They may have some beauty, no doubt. There may be some beauty, but that beauty is temporary and limited. You know, the handsome young man will soon be a bent up, you know, bent, wrinkled, bones creaking, unattractive person. And same with the beautiful girl. At 16, she's very beautiful, but at 65, she's looking something different. Huh? You know, there's that irony. Paul McCartney wrote a song, you know, when I'm 64. Will you still love me? No, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? The irony of it is, you know, at 64 he's getting divorced by his third wife. She's taking him to the cleaners. So, this is it's a challenge actually, because the forms of the material realm, the forms of the material world are very attractive. You know, ultimately, the attractive nature of material existence is a reflection of the attractive nature of the spiritual realm. But because it is very difficult for a conditioned soul to see through the material covering into the spiritual realm and appreciate the superior beauty of spirituality, then the material realm still remains attractive. Even though it's got so many faults. You know, intellectually we can understand the material world is a place of misery. The material world is a place of suffering. The material world is a place of ignorance and foolishness. You know, we can understand these things theoretically. But still, when we see something attractive in the material realm, we are bewildered by it. Very powerful. Of course, Krishna says, Daivihiyesha gunamayi mama maya duracharya. We should understand that that potency is actually coming from Krishna. And Krishna, you know, he gives ample evidence in the Bhagavad Gita how he is actually, you know, working behind everything. What's that? Yes, but that's not the 7th chapter. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a Mata parataram nanyat kinchid asti dananjaya. What comes next? Mai savam midam protam sutre mani guna eva. You know, just as you can't see, you know, when you've got a well-strung set of neck beads on, you can't see the string that holds it all together. But if you take the string out of, the string breaks, finished. All the neck beads are all over the place. So Krishna's supporting and maintaining everything. But because we are covered by the material consciousness, or by association, practically speaking, and by identification with, then we're not able to see Krishna's presence within everything. Very difficult. Well, actually, not difficult. It's not difficult to see Krishna. If one surrenders to Krishna, if one takes shelter of Krishna. And of course, when one has taken shelter of Krishna, then there is nothing more attractive to remaining in the material world. For one who has fully taken shelter of Krishna, is fully absorbed in Krishna's beauty and in his the relationship that one has with the Lord, if one can take shelter of that, then the material creation ceases to be attractive. One can see it as it is. And Rukmini is pointing this out. Why would I go to another? Why would I go back to the material realm? Of course, Rukmini is an eternal associate of the Lord, so she wouldn't go back. She's always forward, if you like. She's always she's the eternal consort of Krishna. She's saying, why would I be attracted to the faulty fallible men of this material realm? They have to die. they'll always be subject to death. Was it Nasato Vijate Bhavo Nabhavo Vijate Sataha? Ubayor Apijishton Tastvanayos Tatpadashabi. Those who have seen the truth understand that of the temporary there is no existence. There is no permanence. There is existence. Even the material creation is an eternal creation of the Lord. But sometimes it's manifest and sometimes it's not. So therefore it is called illusory. It is illusory. It exists, but the forms that it creates are all illusion. It's like, for the moment we're thinking, I exist. I am this person. Basically relating to the body. Of course, the person, the spirit soul, exists. Sat, that's the permanent part. But the material form that we identify with, I'm an Australian, I'm a man, or I'm a woman, I'm 50 X number of years, or I'm 28 years, or how many years old we are related to this particular body. That's all temporary. Nasat means not permanent. Sat means permanent. So the devotees, especially Rukmini, she's not going to be attracted to that which is impermanent. Because this is a measure of our disease. When a devotee becomes purified and makes advancement, then the attraction to things of the material decreases. When a person is bewildered by the material energy, then their attraction for things material is fully encompassing. And as a devotee makes progress in devotional service, actually you see this, like it mentions here that Krishna is the abode of all good qualities, good transcendental qualities. And we see that in the character or in the nature of a devotee who's making advancement in devotional service. Then you see the reduction or the diminishing of bad qualities. Certainly the attraction to things material starts to wane. This is why people can't understand the devotees, is because, their material affection goes down. And they become more and more attracted to just rendering service to Krishna. And they don't worry so much about their material facilities, material position. And that bewilders materialistic people. They think, what's wrong with these people? Why aren't they interested in things, accumulating material benefits and prospering materially? But not that we're not interested in those things, but it's not that we're too worried about them for ourselves. You see that in the character of the great devotees. They're quite happy to work for Krishna, to sacrifice their lives for Krishna, and then Krishna provides for them. Of course, they live very simply. They live very simply, just like, sometimes it's not popular to worship Krishna as much as it is to perhaps worship Lord Shiva and other demigods and so forth, because they tend to, the followers of Lord Shiva, you see, very opulent and wealthy and well off. Whereas the devotees of Krishna, they're generally a little bit poorer. Right? But the interesting thing is that the devotees of Krishna actually have far more wealth than the followers of Lord Shiva, because they have their material wealth, but the devotees have spiritual wealth, which means, detachment from those things. Okay, we may have wealth one day, certainly yes, but then another day we may not be wealthy. But that's not a problem for the devotees, because they know we'll be looked after by Krishna. We'll have enough. We'll be provided for. Huh? Certainly around here, nobody's dying of starvation. Everybody has warm clothes to wear. They've got a roof over their head. So the devotees don't worry too much about their material well-being, because they know that Krishna will look after them. And they generally become detached. And so what you'll find is, and of course this is the devotees, characteristic of a devotee is generally they have some faith in Krishna. There's Shraddha, faith. And their faith is, their determination is that if I serve Krishna, then Krishna will provide all that I require. This is the definition of faith as given by Krishna Das Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The definition of faith is that if I serve Krishna, then Krishna will look after me. And usually that faith then brings the devotee into the association of other devotees, similarly minded persons. Right? This is what happens. Ado Shraddha, Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya. So from having some faith that Krishna is God and that he will protect me, that brings that person then into the association of the devotees. It's very simple. You know, we hear the chanting of Hare Krishna on the streets, or we get a book, or we go to the restaurant, get some prasadam, and then that stimulates an interest in Krishna and devotional service. Usually the devotees are looking for friendship, association, they have an aspiration for liberation or whatever. And they usually enjoy the association of the devotees, because in the association of the devotees they get the experience of devotional service that satisfies them. This is what people are looking for. They're looking for satisfaction, they're looking for happiness, looking for pleasure, if you like. And the type of pleasure that the devotees experience in rendering service to Krishna is experienced in the association of the devotees. It's very attractive. I remember when I first started going to the temple, and there would always be a point where I would think, oh boy, this is so intense, I've got to go home. Right? The devotees are always intensely focused on serving Krishna, always chanting Hare Krishna, always talking about Krishna. Used to annoy me with Gaura Mandala Bhumi. He wouldn't talk about anything other than Krishna. I was like, what's wrong with this guy? So, you hop in a car and drive home, but then when you get home you think, oh boy, I can hardly wait to get back to the temple. This place is not as good as the temple and the association of the devotees. I remember, actually, my wife's sister had sent me these reggae records from England. They were in England, and I was into reggae music, and she sent me back a parcel of records. I was like, great. But at that time, I'd started chanting 16 rounds and going to the temple, so I'd come home and I'd think, I got these records to listen to. And then I just couldn't get into them anymore. I think, what a waste of money. I spent all this money on these records and now I can't enjoy them. Better go back to the temple. Go back to the temple. So, our attraction to Krishna weakens our affection or attraction for things material. But, the measure of our infection, if you like, of the disease, right, is that we still find sometimes, occasionally, we're distracted. But what happens is, as one takes the association of the devotees, and we realise that there is a higher platform of Krishna consciousness, we realise the higher taste in Krishna consciousness, then we start to seriously follow the practice of devotional service. Bhajana Kriya means basically performing our bhajan. I don't know what the Bengali is, but there's a Bengali, when the devotees greet each other, then that's what they say. How is your bhajan? Basically, that's what it means. How's your bhajan going? This is the greeting of the devotees. How is your bhajan? This is how Gaura Govinda Maharaj used to greet the devotees when he would come. Because he greeted me like that and I didn't know what he was talking about. And he had to explain it to me. How's your bhajan? How's your chanting of Hare Krishna going? How's your study of the Bhagavatam? How's your worship of the deities? How's your puja going? That's what the devotees are interested in. So in the association of the devotees, then one starts to take seriously the chanting of Hare Krishna. And then one moves into that stage of devotional service where one's material inclinations are purified. It's not an easy stage because we are attached. We're still attached to things material. So anatta nivritti, after bhajana kriya, which means basically practicing, doing the positive things in devotional service, then comes anatta nivritti, which means removing unwanted. This is why Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, gives us all these guidelines. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. But then, you know, that's the first ten items. They're all positive. Then the second ten items, don't do this, 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 don't do this. So we have yama and niyama. Until one has that taste, you know, that strong attraction to Krishna, and whilst we still have an affection for things material, then we need to follow the regulated principles of devotional service quite strictly. Right? This is the process. This is our system. It's why we have the rules and regulations. It's a bit like, you know, if you teaching a child to walk, and you know they have those little those round sort of things with wheels on, and you put the child inside, and he's supported, so he doesn't fall over. So the rules and regulations in devotional service are somewhat like that, in that they support us in engaging in devotional service, so that we don't get distracted and we don't get deviated and we remain fixed, even though we may not initially have that strong, deep faith that just like Rukmini is an example here. You know, she's saying, I'm not going to be attracted to, you know, these temporary things of the material world. They're just, these men are just failures. Huh? Practically speaking, everybody in the material world is a failure. Why is that? Because they all have to die. They're all subject to here, fear. Marcha sada uru bhayam. Bhayam means fear. Uru means great fear. Sada means always. Marcha means death. So everybody in the material world is in the grip of fear of death. Everybody. Huh? So why should I be attracted to such persons? Why should I be attracted to the things of the material realm which are always subject to death? So, you know, the devotee realizes, Rukmini has a deep, you know, that's her eternal position at the lotus feet of Krishna, not bewildered at all by the material energy. But while an aspiring transcendentalist is in that intermediate stage of devotional service, we're not completely purified. See, because what happens is that when one is completely purified in Krishna consciousness, then one has no affection for things material at the stage of bhava, bhakti. At the stage of bhava, bhakti, then the devotee is completely purified. Well, at least Krishna encourages the devotees. When one engages in the process of anatta nivritti, then gradually as one avoids the obstacles that exist in the path of devotional service, because of our attraction and affection for things material, if we follow the regulated principles, then what happens is gradually one becomes steady. And then from that steadiness comes a taste, if you like. Taste. Ruchi or ruchi, some taste. The higher taste. And of course Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishaya vinivartante. Niraharasya dehina. So dehina means one who's embodied. Right? That means us. So Krishna makes the point, if you're embodied, then there will always be this tendency to be attracted to things material. Right? But if you paramdrishtvara nivartate, if you can get a higher taste from the performance of devotional activities, then you won't be again attracted to things material. Just like I would go home and want to stick on my stereo, and I think, oh God, this is tasteless. I want to hear the kirtan. I want to participate in the juicy kirtan, not the dry old mumbo jumbo of the reggae world. Of course, we have to be careful, actually, because at almost any stage in devotional service, until one has got to the stage of bhava bhakti, and even at the stage of bhava bhakti, because Bharat Maharaj has described how he got to the stage of bhava bhakti, and still, because of his affection for the deer, he fell down and had to take birth again. Of course, it was a little mistake in one sense, a little mistake, but it just gives an example of how focused a devotee has to be on the regulated principles in order to get the higher taste. And that it's easy to be distracted. It's not difficult to be distracted. Bharat Maharaj got distracted. Of course, he, as a result of all of the devotional service that he performed, then he got to take birth again as a deer, but not just an ordinary deer. He got to be a deer at the ashram of the Vaishnavas, and so he could then again hear the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad, he could hear the recitation, the Krishna Katha. It just shows that how, through the different stages of devotional service, one still has to be strictly adherent to the regulated principles, the do's and the don'ts, basically, that's why Prabhupada says that, the nectar of devotion is the law book for ISKCON. Because if we follow Rupa Goswami's laws, if you like, then we'll always remain in Krishna consciousness. Ignore the laws, and then the desire for material things will invariably increase if we don't follow the process of devotional service carefully. in the association of the devotees, one has a great appreciation for the mercy that one has received. And one recognizes that everybody is actually a recipient of Krishna's mercy. That's the nature of a healthy devotional community, when each one appreciates, oh, you are the recipient of Krishna's mercy. Please accept my humble obeisances. But we receive Krishna's mercy, we get the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas means associating with the devotees and applying ourselves steadily and determinedly with patience and enthusiasm in the devotional activities that are recommended by personalities like Rupa Goswami. And then we can gradually work our way through this anatta nivritti stage of devotional service and come to the point of steadiness. And then in the stage of steadiness, then we can start to relish, if you like, the pleasures of devotional service, be satisfied in devotional service. And appreciate this these points, the points that Rukmini is making, and not be attracted to the things of, you know, the fallible soldiers of the material realm that are always subject to death, if you like. It's quite amazing, you know, the material energy is so powerful and so strong. Even though it's the place of death, we think, wow, this is a really exciting place. Maybe I can have a good time here. Very powerful. Of course, we should understand the reason why that is actually because it is actually a shadow or a reflection of the spiritual realm. And so, you know, there are elements of truth, if you like, in what we perceive in the material creation. It is actually a reflection of the spiritual realm. But, you know, just like any reflection in the mirror, you know, if you try to, you know, hug somebody in the mirror, it's cold and light, it doesn't have anything. Yeah? Cold. Oh, I might just finish here. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Intra.
I love this question, but I can't understand somebody who is eternally liberated, like with me, even making a statement. How can somebody make a statement about the material world and not being attracted if they've never been there? How can they understand something impermanent if they're eternal?
Well, that's one of the characteristics of the residents of the spiritual realm, is they're in knowledge. They don't have to experience it. That's a second or third class method of understanding something. The first class method of understanding is to hear from an authority and then realise it. So the residents of the spiritual realm, they don't have to come and suffer in the material world to know that it's a place of suffering. They can see it in any case. You know, the residents of the spiritual realm are able to see the suffering of material existence. Amazing, when you think about it. So, certainly it is a fact that, you know, in order to understand something, you have to experience it. But that's not the only means by which you gain knowledge. But, you know, you can see in Prabhupada explains, you know, that there are those who, even they experience it. And more than, you know, once they experience the suffering of material existence, and still they enjoy it, so-called enjoy it. They stay in it. So the residents of the spiritual realm have a higher intelligence, if you like. And that's why they're in the spiritual realm and we're in the material realm. That's why we're in material existence and they're not. Because we think we're enjoying when actually we're suffering.
I find lots of people believe in God, but they find it hard to believe that Krishna is God.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I was talking to some boys in Perth the other day, the Sunday feast. Really nice guys, and from the Netherlands. And one of them was saying, you know, I like to describe God, you know, in the form of energy, right? In the form of energy. You know, it seems to me like there's this energy out there. And I said, and I made a point. I said, well, yes, that's true. You can describe God in terms of energy, just like I can describe you in terms of energy. Right? You know, you are so many molecules packed up in a certain amount of space, all vibrating at a certain temperature, and you know, we can describe you physically, if you like, as energy. But if I just describe you as energy without appreciating your personality and character, then we're missing something, right? We're missing you, the essence of you. You know, if I just describe you as a bunch of molecules vibrating. What about you, the person? Right? So, you know, people want to think of God as some sort of energy, but they don't want to know his person. Right? And, you know, heaven forbid that the Hare Krishnas have the, you know, the handle on it all. Right? And that God is a person. And he happens to be a blue boy who, you know, plays in the forests of Vrindavan, herds cows and does all sorts of stuff, you know. You know, if anybody's going to be right, well, it can't be the Hare Krishnas. Right? They're too weird. They're too weird to have a handle on anything. Huh? But a lot of it has got to do with the fact that God is a person. And that's too challenging for people. Because, you know, the way I see it is, if God's a person, that means you've got to listen to what he's got to say. Not only do you have to listen, you're supposed to do what he tells you to do. Whoa, hang on a second. I just want God as, you know, some sort of energy out there that I can have a relationship that I like, but not that he tells me what to do. Right? That's, you know, and even for the devotees who are attracted, you know, we're attracted, sometimes that is a very difficult, you know, it's difficult to come to terms with that relationship that we have with Krishna, with God, if you like. But anyway, he liked that. He said, he's, yeah, okay, yeah. He's saying, does God have to be a person? Why can't he just be some energy? Well, he can be energy, but he also, that energy happens to be a person as well. that's quite a challenge for people. And, you know, I mean, a classic statement my mother said to me, you know, God's not a person, is he? I said, Mum, God's got to be a person. God has to be a person. If God is the source of everything, he's the energy that supports all of the other energy, right? It's just logical. This is logic, very simple logic. If God is the energy that supports all of the other energy, and we're coming from God, and we are persons, then he must have personality, because if he's the source of everything, he can't be the source of everything and not have something in his creation. This is what they're doing. They're basically saying God is just the energy, but he doesn't have personality. So, but how come he can create personality but not have personality himself? So it doesn't make sense. It's illogical. But that kind of logic is just too simple for people. You know, that's like, huh? That can't be right. It's too simple. Right? If God's creation has personality, then he must also have a personality. That stands to reason. It's logical. But it's so simple, it, you know, it's not complicated enough for people to be, I don't know, I don't like that. No, won't have it. Don't like that idea. Anything else?